And fresh in from the Eggs and Issues Forum at Tri-County Tech, I will say it so that the congressman doesn't need to. It is Election Day. Please go out and vote and express yourself at the ballot box, assuming, that there is no Democrat race in Washington County, but for the surrounding area, regardless of your party, independent, libertarian, Republican, go out and vote. Congressman Jim Bridenstine, welcome back to Bartlesville.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Charlie.
And you brought up several issues, primarily based on your committee membership this morning for the Eggs and Issues Forum. And we don't usually look at space, but
right.
Somebody needs to.
Absolutely. So I'm on the Armed Services Committee, Subcommittee on Strategic Forces. So on that subcommittee, we deal a lot with our space-based architecture for nuclear command and control and our early warning for missile launches, mm-hmm. space-based infrared systems. And so I deal a lot with our communication architecture for space-based communications over the horizon. As a Navy pilot, of course, I've used those kind of systems, but I really it wasn't until I became a member of Congress where I was responsible for making sure that they actually were replenished when it was necessary. So these are some of the issues that we talked about this morning at the Bartlesville Chamber. I'm also on the Science, Space, and Technology Committee. I chair the subcommittee on the environment. We oversee NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Almost half of NOAA's budget is satellites. We're talking about weather satellites here. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also on the Space Subcommittee, which oversees, of course, NASA. So a lot of what I work on in Washington, D.C. are space-related issues. And so it was good to be at the Bartlesville Chamber and share with them some of what we're working on our committees.
Well, and you mentioned several items that at least I picked up on because, my Air Force time was in the communications field repairing radio equipment. Mine was mostly, either ground-to-air or control tower type equipment, but nonetheless, some other people had to be working on that SpaceCom stuff.
Absolutely. So about 80% of what we use, the Department of Defense uses for over-the-horizon communications, our satellite communications, about 80% of that is now leased from commercial operators. And that was a direct result of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq when our warfighters were not able to get the capacity necessary to do what they needed to do. I'm talking about passing high-resolution motion picture imagery through our communication architecture. Mm-hmm. Our government-owned and operated constellation just wasn't significant enough to handle the throughput necessary. So the United States government, of course, I was not in Congress at the time. I was a warfighter at the time. But the United States Congress and, of course, the executive branch started leasing capacity from commercial operators that had satellites in space to deliver things like DirecTV and Dish Network and to deliver internet broadband from space. And, of course, when we went to war, we needed to be able to pass the right information over the channels that were necessary, and so we leased capacity from those operators, and it worked.
Well, just looking at sitting in this chair when I first started out as a young fledgling broadcaster, you set up a telephone wired network to get ABC, CBS, network news.
Right.
And then, of course, SATCOM 1 and everything else came along, boosted yep. up on the satellite. And everything, if it doesn't originate in this studio, I get it by way of some kind of a satellite link.
That's right. And those satellites are actually highly valuable for capacity. We lease capacity for the Department of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just for commercial purposes, but the Department of Defense leases that capacity as well. One of the challenges that we have, the good thing when you lease capacity from commercial is it distributes our architecture in space, meaning we have more satellites that we are reliant on. So when the Chinese and the Russians are developing technologies to shoot down satellites, which they're doing, they're testing, mm-hmm. they're no kidding actually doing it. And in fact, in 2007, the Chinese shot down one of their own weather satellites just to prove that they could do it. And show us that they could do it.
And not create an international incident in the process because they shot down their own.
Well, it did create an international incident because they created an orbital debris field of 5,000 pieces of trackable orbital debris, which is still damaging all kinds of assets in space currently. But the reality is when we lease capacity from commercial, commercial satellite operators, like those that provide Dish Network and DirecTV, we in essence distribute the architecture in a way that complicates the targeting solution for the enemies. So if they want to shoot down satellites to prevent us from communicating, well, now they've got to shoot down a whole lot more than they used to have to shoot down, because we can pass the same information via different channels. And so that deters the enemy from actually making the investments to begin with. And it benefits commercial private industry. So.
No, but there always was that security feeling that the government owned the stuff, therefore you had control.
That's right. And of course, that's one of the challenges that we've been having in Washington is, if you were to suggest, as I have, that we need to lease capacity from commercial, well, there's a lot of satellite builders out there, people that benefit from the $11 billion government-owned and government-operated satellite programs. And when you say we need to lease from commercial, all of a sudden, those big contractors that are making a lot of money on the taxpayer, they get upset. And I'm okay with that, because the reality is this. The Department of Defense, and this is one example I give my colleagues in Congress, the Department of Defense is dependent on gasoline. And yet, does the Department of Defense go out and...
And JP4 and a few other things.
Yeah, right. We're dependent on fuel. Do we go out and drill oil wells? Do we refine oil in the United States government? No, we buy it from commercial operators. And why? Because if you wanted the Department of Defense to go out and drill oil, we would never have gasoline. We would never have jet propellant. It just wouldn't happen. So we're living in an era now. We're past the 1980s. We're past the 1990s. We're living in an era where communication satellites are robust and available, and there's a network out there, and we should just lease capacity, the same as the Department of Defense does with internet service. I mean, if you wanted the Department of Defense to build the internet, which is how it started, by the way, DARPA,
yeah.
Defense Advanced Research Program Agency, but ultimately it wasn't until it got commercialized that it actually became what it is today, that's transformed our lives. And space, whether it's communications or remote sensing for imagery, which Google and a whole host of other private companies do, or weather. All that is being commercialized in ways that are going to be beneficial to the taxpayer and ways that are beneficial for the United States government, because we save money by being one of many customers rather than the agency that purchases, owns, and operates satellites.
But now we have to come up with a solution to the space debris, the space junk. You can't just have the Starship Enterprise come along with a phaser array or a tractor beam and suck it up.
That's exactly right. So because we have so much activity happening in space these days, commercial activity, we have an orbital debris problem. And we've got to make sure that we have the right orbital debris mitigation processes in place for our commercial operators, so they're not creating more debris. And we've got to make sure that we're providing the right space situational awareness capabilities. So the United States Air Force historically has operated all of the sensors that were necessary to provide situational awareness to the commercial operators in space. Well, now we're getting to the point where the Air Force is getting overburdened because...
And undermanned, but that's beside the point.
Right, undermanned. And we need that manpower, the people wearing Air Force uniforms, we need them focused on fighting and winning wars in space. Because if you look at what the Chinese and the Russians are doing, not only with direct descent anti-satellite missiles, but also co-orbital devices that are kinetic and can damage and destroy satellites, but also jamming and dazzling, which is using directed energy and lasers to confuse our satellites. And then, of course, just spoofing where they hack into our networks and make us believe things that aren't true. These are all things that we have to mitigate. And we need our warfighters focused on those threats and not focused on determining whether a commercial weather satellite is going to run into a commercial communication satellite that has nothing to do necessarily with national security.
Well, the House has traditionally passed the budget bills with or without interruption, but generally you've gotten the job done.
Yeah.
For at least the first time, last time at least I talked to Senator Lankford anyway, he was very, very cautiously optimistic because at least some of those bills are making it into Senate votes.
Yes, yeah, so we have seen some progress on some bills in the Senate, which for my first 3 years, now I'm in my fourth year in Congress, we haven't seen that happen before. Harry Reid has been very effective in shutting down the entire appropriations process, the entire legislative process. And of course, he does that because He can then force Republicans to vote for things like continuing resolutions and omnibus spending packages, which gives the power to the president to issue all the executive orders that, the president wants to issue. So we have seen the Senate pass a few appropriation bills. They're not the significant ones that really matter.
Yeah.
We need to see the Senate pass the defense appropriation bill. We've done it in the House of Representatives. If the Senate will do that, then I'll be convinced that they're serious about it. That's half of that of the appropriation bills. Half of it is defense.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to see the Senate go through on that. And once they do that, I'll be convinced that the Senate is committed to the process the way it was intended.
Well, one of the things that you have campaigned on is that your votes to get a better yes.
Yes.
And you talked about that a little bit this morning.
Absolutely. So a lot of times, and of course, you hear people talk about, well, if he voted no on a CR, it's just because he wants a shutdown. And, you know, this kind of talk, it's just nonsense. The reality is we have a process in this country where members of Congress can represent their constituents, where we can use limitation amendments to put a check on the executive branch. The Constitution gave Congress the power of the purse. And so when we want to defund things like Planned Parenthood, for example, or the president's illegal executive order for amnesty or Syrian refugee resettlement, when the FBI is telling us that we can't possibly vet the refugees, the president's green agenda with all of the EPA rules and regulations, the clean power plan, the waters of the U.S., if we want to defund these things, we have to do it in the appropriations process. And what the president and Harry Reid like to do is make sure that they pass no appropriation bills and then Republicans come back and do a CR. Well, when we vote for a CR, the president can then issue whatever executive orders he wants. So when I vote no, the reason I vote no is because I believe in a representational republic. I believe in using the power of the purse as a check on the executive branch, which has been used by both parties since the foundation of this country. So these are important things. When we're sworn to defend the Constitution, we're sworn to defend the institutions that enable us to represent our constituents. And ultimately, when you vote on a CR, we're undermining the very Constitution that gives us the ability to represent our constituents.
Well, I will mention, of course, this is Election Day, and I assume that since I don't see a sticker on there, you either voted early or you intend to go vote later today.
I have an appointment at 11 o'clock to go vote, and there will be Channel 6 is going to be there, so there's a big production. When you're the guy running, they make a big production out of it, so I had to make an appointment to go vote, and so I'm looking forward to doing that at 11 a.m. I would highly encourage everybody to go vote, especially if you're planning to vote for me. I really need you to go vote. I say that in jest, but I'm also very serious. When you think about these elections, it's important for people to take advantage of the great opportunities that we have in this country. A lot of people have made the ultimate sacrifice so that we could enjoy this. And that's true whether you're voting for me or voting for the other guy. I would just ask that you vote for me.
Thank you very much. Congressman Jim Bridenstine, making a trip to Bartlesville. You have periodically checked in with our voters since you started your original campaign. Thank you for your attentiveness to the voters.
Always, Charlie. It's good to be here.
Thank you very much. That's our time this morning with Congressman Jim Bridenstine. I said I would get you out the door by quarter till, and I'm 30 seconds away from that.
So all right. Thank you
very
Charlie.
Much. AM 14.
Dear Daddy,
dear Mom,
I love you.
I miss you.
I'm proud to call you my father.
Every year, Snowball Express honors the